Hi, friends, and welcome to the By Faith Podcast. My name is Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. This season on By Faith, we're talking about the ins and outs of vocational ministry. I have one more episode for you next week before By Faith transitions into the Ministry Wives Podcast in August. I have so enjoyed creating and producing this podcast for you over the course of the past 4 years, and I will say that I am happy to have the backing and help of NAM moving forward. I hope you're excited about many more episodes to come on all things ministry. For now, though, I want to say thank you. Thank you for listening to By Faith, whether this is your very first episode or you've listened since the beginning. Thank you for sharing the podcast with your friends and coming along for the ride with me. I am truly honored to get to serve you in this way. I'm also really excited to share today's episode with you. Today's episode marks my final interviews for By Faith because next week I'll be sharing some of the audiobook of my latest book, How to Thrive as a Pastor's Wife, with you. I can definitely say that I'm going out with a bang today because these two guests, yes, there are multiple guests today, are really fantastic and will encourage you so much as they talk about transitions in ministry. My first guest is Irene Sun. Irene has been on the podcast before talking about raising PKs, and she joins me today to talk about transitioning her family into a new church that has brought on her husband for his very first lead pastor role. My second guest is Glenna Marshall. Glenna joins me to talk about a very interesting transition she and her husband have seen their church through, and I don't want to tell too many details because it's such a fascinating story, but it's created a lot of change and transition for her personally, even though they haven't moved. So Glenna shares what she's learning about herself and others through this transition. So here, friends, is my interview first with Irene and then with Glenna. I'm excited to have Irene Sun back to By Faith. Irene joined me a few years ago. We talked about raising pastor's kids. So now she's joining me because a transition has happened in her life. Welcome, Irene.
Hi, thank you so much for having me back.
Yeah, whenever you were on before, your husband was looking for a pastoral role. And now, about a year and a half ago, he moved into his pastoral role.
That's right. And it's funny, Christine, because when I moved to Pittsburgh, there are pastors' wives in the area who listen to that particular episode of the podcast. And so Stacy Riok is a writer for Desiring God, and she is a pastor's wife just a block away from our church.
Really?
So it's interesting because she said, hey, I heard that episode that you did with Christine Hoover, and I can't believe that you ended up a block away from our church.
It's kind of weird when somebody says, I listen to you on your podcast or I read your stuff, and they are like, they feel very much like they already know you and you have no idea who they are. Although you might have already known Stacy.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, through her writing. So that was a really fun connection when we moved to Pittsburgh.
That's so fun. Okay, so tell us what he's doing, where he's serving, all that good stuff. Introduce yourself and your family. Tell us about you.
Oh, sure. So I am Irene. My last name is Sun, S-U-N, and I'm married to Hans, who is a pastor in Pittsburgh Chinese Church in the North Hills here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And we moved here in June of 2020. But we started serving in Pittsburgh Chinese Church at the beginning of April and then officially in May. So anyway, all of that is to say we were transitioning in the middle of a pandemic along with four boys. And they are, okay, let's see what I can get this right. 13, 11, 8, and 3.
Wow. Wow. So it's been a huge transition. We're talking about transitions in ministry, but you've transitioned during COVID. Tough. So what has that been like transitioning through COVID?
You know, we were waiting for two and a half years of prayer and rejections and more prayer and more rejections. And now that we're looking back at all the waiting and the tears and the waiting and the prayers, the Lord is using it powerfully in our lives because the waiting period was exactly what we needed for our transition. Because without the waiting period, I think the transition would simply feel completely unbearable. Mm-hmm. But because we were waiting for so long and we were hoping to belong to a church family permanently, because we belong to a church family in Chicago, right, too. But mm-hmm. there was a feeling of we are moving soon, but we don't know when. But to finally be settled in a church where we are so grateful to be a part of the community has made the transition so sweet because we are seeing the faces of the people we've been praying for the last 2 years. And mm-hmm. so I am just so grateful to the Lord that he did not show us where we were going to serve, because I was begging the Lord, Lord, just like assure us, like, where will we be? And if the Lord had given us a vision of the future, you know what? We would have seen Hans and me and the four boys standing in front of a laptop, waving at the laptop in our apartment in Chicago. And that was our first week in Pittsburgh Chinese Church. And we would have had no means of understanding the vision.
Right.
Because it would make no sense to us whatsoever.
Yeah.
But Hans started his pastorate on Zoom, preaching on Zoom, counseling on Zoom, attending elders meeting on Zoom. We attended cell group meetings on Zoom. Everything on Zoom. My children went on youth group on Zoom. It was all on Zoom. And that was our transition.
That is tough. That is tough. Are y'all doing more in person now? Where are y'all as a church?
So in June of 2020, the church decided to go into a hybrid model. Okay. And so when they announced that, after a council meeting, we realized, oh, we have to move to Pittsburgh in a pandemic.
You hadn't thought about that before?
Well, I think we thought that the church would not go into hybrid until much later.
Oh, I see.
But because Pennsylvania's COVID situation was a lot better than Chicago COVID situation, so Pennsylvania went into hybrid mode a lot sooner than Chicago, Illinois.
Got it.
And so because of that, I think we were just a little taken aback because Chicago was so strict being a big city, whereas Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, being a smaller city, was not as tight in terms of the social distancing rules. And I mean, there were definitely a lot of guidelines, but compared to Chicago, it was not as many. So we had to move a lot sooner than we thought we did. And the Lord had to help us mightily because the real estate was shut down at the time. Movers were not moving. You know, there were just a lot of complications because how do we look for a house when the real estate was closed? And a lot of real estate agents were not even showing homes because of COVID. Anyway, so it was just a really interesting time where the Lord needed to open every single door, and every single door needed to be opened through prayers. And so we transitioned in stages. And so there were a lot of driving back and forth between Pittsburgh and Chicago, which is, for your information, about 8 to 9 hours.
Thank you for that information.
Yeah, with four boys in the car. So lots of driving back and forth and moving in pieces rather than moving all at once. And then not being able to say goodbye to our church and our community back in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So the last time we saw them was March 8th, I think. Uh-huh. And we said, goodbye, see you next week. And we've never seen them again after that because the church was then shut down on March 15th nationwide. Right. And so, but then on the other side, it's like if we hadn't candidated in Pittsburgh Chinese Church before the pandemic, then we couldn't have the opportunity to transition in the pandemic. And so there's just so many moving parts. And at each stopping place, we see an abundance of grace and providence from the Lord, and only He can provide it.
Mm. That's so great to hear. And for people in transition to remember, God does provide every step of the way in just the right timing, in the right ways. I'd love to hear about your transition from being a lay person in the church. So you guys were serving, but in your church, but Hans was not on staff. Am I correct about that?
Yes. Yeah, so that is correct. Hans was the pastor of our church in Chicago, and then he stepped down to finish his dissertation in systematic theology at Trinity Seminary. And so during that time, he still had the office of an elder, but he was serving as a lay elder as opposed to a paid elder.
Right, got
it. Serving as a volunteer. And so the pressure was a lot less. So we served for 7 years as the pastor, and then 7 more years as a lay elder. And a lot of the, some of the responsibilities were still the same. He was still helping with pulpit ministry and teaching Sunday school, but a lot of our energy was devoted to finishing his dissertation.
Okay. So he's moved into this new role where he is the pastor of the Chinese church, the English speaking congregation. Explain his role. Does he have a co-pastor? Is he what?
Oh, right. So in the Chinese churches, sometimes there are two congregations within one church. So they still have the same governing body of deacons and council members, and the elder board work very closely together. But on Sunday mornings, even though they've made all the decisions together, on Sunday mornings, the Chinese-speaking congregation would gather in one big room and they have their Chinese service. And the English-speaking congregation would gather in a different room for the English service. And so Hans, although he is a pastor elder of our church, our congregational church, with this, along with all the other elders of the church, but his role is mainly to preach and teach in the English-speaking portion of the congregation.
Okay, that makes sense. So you've moved into a much more official spot, being the pastor's wife, and also a much more visible spot than what you were in before. And so I would love to hear what your challenges have been during this transition, and what are you learning through this transition?
What am I learning? The first thing I was learning was that the Lord does provide for everything that we need. And I think that was a very real concern for us because we just did not know how to move from one city to the next without God's help. And Elizabeth Elliot is fond of saying, God will provide everything you need. And if you don't have it, it must mean you don't need it. So it's like, well, we don't have this. It's like, well, it's probably because we don't need it. And it was helpful to just trust in God's sovereignty and God's providence to provide everything that we need. And also just another lesson, I think, would be to fight the temptation to, okay, so let me backtrack a little bit. So in the Chinese community, we have this concept called losing face. So face in a Chinese culture means honor or dignity. And so we are taught to preserve our honor and dignity in all our relationships. And so there's a phrase called save face. So to save face means to preserve honor and dignity. And then there's also another phrase called lose face, and that means to lose one's honor and dignity, or to be shamed. Uh-huh. And so that's the context of the Chinese church. So even though we're English speakers, and a lot of our congregation members was born and raised and speak English and grew up in American culture, but because of our parents and our grandparents, there's still this compulsion to save face and not to lose face. And so I think that one of the struggle then coming into a very visible role is to fight against my compulsion to maintain a degree of I know what I'm doing. One of my biggest temptation in my tension and my compulsion of wanting to save my face and not to lose face is that I put a lot of identity in my performance, and I feel the weight of my role as the pastor's wife. And instead of rooting my identity in Christ and Christ alone, I am rooting my identity shamefully and sadly in my performance, like whether or not I did well today, whether or not I remembered somebody's name, or whether or not I remembered to fill up the form for the reimbursement check, or whether or not I have done enough. Instead of resting entirely on Christ's work on the cross, I am resting my identity in my performance as a pastor's wife. And I was listening to Alistair Begg's sermon this morning, and he gave the example of the thief on the cross. And when he shows up in heaven and the angel asks him, "So, what are you, why are you here? And what makes you think you can get into heaven?" And Alistair Begg says, if you start the answer with the word I, then you've already failed, because you're still resting your salvation on faith and your work. So the only quote unquote right answer is to always begin your sentence with he, not I believe, or I have done, or I believe that scripture is true, or I believe in the justification by faith. But think, Alistair Begg says, think of the thief on the cross. When he shows up in heaven, how would he answer? Because maybe he didn't even know Jesus's name. I'm sure that he didn't know about justification by faith or the inerrancy of scripture. So what would he say when he comes to the gate of heavens? And the thief on the cross would simply say, "The man in the middle cross said that I could come." And I have to keep the gospel front and center of my daily ins and out, my daily coming in and going out. Because at the end of the day, the Father is searching for worshipers. At the end of the day, the Father is searching for worshipers who are willing to lose face for his name's sake. Because whoever saves his face will lose it, but whoever loses his face for the sake of Christ will bear the likeness of Christ. And I cannot rest my identity in my work and performance, but I must just remember that I already bear Christ's name. Christ has placed his name on me. Yahweh placed his name on the foreheads of the priests of Israel. And I bear Yahweh's name, not because of what I have done, but simply because of his grace and his mercy. And that must be at the core of my identity.
That's so good. And I think what you're expressing, this tension is often what ministry wives, especially I would say in the first 5 years, that was my biggest tension, was how do I do this out of a knowledge of God's love for me and what he's done for me and letting that overflow in love toward other people. How do I do that while I know eyes are on me, not doing it for the approval of people or for a sense of my own performance, feeling like I can pat myself on the back. And I think that you're describing for what many women experience when they step into a ministry role for the first time. And I still sometimes feel that tension. I don't think it's something that just we suddenly get better at it at some point, but we do learn how to enact our faith in ministry and how to walk by the Spirit and to do things for his eyes alone versus the people who are watching us. So thank you for expressing that and also giving us your thought process of inputting truth and processing the truth. It's so helpful. I also think about the transition you've made moving, and that involves a marriage relationship and it involves kids. And so I'd love to talk about how the transition, how you and Hans as a couple are experiencing the transition and trying to create a healthy family rhythm and couple rhythm in your new role and in your new city. Yeah. Anything you would share, we want to hear about that.
Yeah. I encountered Jen Ashman, and I've since really enjoyed her writing and her work. Mm-hmm. And she wrote, and this was just like something she posted on Facebook, so I don't even know whether it's like in one of her books, but Jen Ashman was a missionary to Japan for many years. And so this sentence is from her, except I tweaked it for our purposes today. She writes, "Never sacrifice your family for the Great Commission, but do sacrifice as a family for the Great Commission."
That's awesome.
I'll repeat that again. Never sacrifice your family for the Great Commission, but do sacrifice as a family for the Great Commission. And I find that to be so helpful because I grew up in a pastor's home. My mm-hmm. parents were both in ministry, and we led very intense lives. And at one point, my dad, because in Malaysia, we didn't have a lot of pastors. And so he and my mom were called to minister to 3 churches all at once for a duration of 4 years.
Wow.
And so that means three Christmas pageants and 3 Sunday schools and 3 men's groups, 3 women's groups, 3 youth groups. And my parents were in that grueling schedule for a duration of 4 years when I was growing up. And they did not do everything perfectly, but they were vessels of grace for me because they brought me along in their ministry. And so that's why I was in 3 Christmas pageants instead of leaving me at home while my mom was directing 3 Christmas pageants. She put me in 3 Christmas pageants.
Oh my goodness.
While she was pregnant, you know, and these were rural churches in Malaysia. And so she would hike up mountains with me and being pregnant. And so all I'm saying is that she brought me along mm-hmm. and she included me and my sisters in her serving of others. And at the end, when what made her finally step down from official capacity was she came home one evening after a small group and I fell asleep on my math homework. And so that was when she decided, okay, it's just too much for my children. And so she stepped back and she held her ministry very loosely and just decided then, like, well, my children need me now. So I'm going to stop my official capacity at church and I'm just going to stay home with the children. And she did that for many years. And so the way that I think I translate that memory into my own experience is that I've chosen to homeschool my children. And so that is the way that the Lord has provided for our family in the Chinese church. And the way that Hans and I do ministry as a team, I like to be involved in what he's doing. And he really wants me to be involved in what he's doing. And so part of this is just my joyful submission of what my husband is asking from me, which is to take a very active role in teaching the Bible to the women in our congregation and to counsel the women in our congregation. And I know that some churches, there are women's ministry director to do that, but our church, we don't have a women's ministry director. And my husband has kindly opened up this opportunity for me because he knows that I love teaching the Bible. And so I appreciate the way that he lifts me up and know how I thrive. And so because I'm so involved at church, homeschooling is actually the thing that provides opportunity for me to be accountable, to continue to be in my children's lives. So we're part of a classical homeschooling community where we're part of a community, but every parent is required to physically be there every Friday on community days. So I don't have the temptation, which is a very real temptation, to just drop my kids off and not know what they're doing at all, but to continue to be involved in helping them, preparing for their presentations, helping them with their memory work and reading the Bible every morning and reading Charlotte's Web right now every morning after breakfast. Mm-hmm. And that has helped me tremendously to keep me accountable to be in my children's lives, even though we are very, we're very occupied, let's say, during the night, because that's usually when the small group and the young adult fellowship are meeting.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's great. I appreciate your insight on this transition to ministry that you're in. You're still, stepping forward in some new places and new opportunities. And so we look forward to seeing what will come of your ministry there. And you also have a writing ministry. I do want you to mention your book before you go. Well, not just a book, but you have several children's books and I love, 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 love them. One is coming out soon. So will you tell us about that one?
Yeah, the one that's coming out very soon is a book called Taste and See, All About God's Goodness. And it's such a privilege to write this book because so my first book is about numbers because I have a son who loves numbers and I wrote this book about numbers in the Bible for him. And so when I was thinking about what should I write next, I know that I have another son who loves food. He loves food to a point where if I was steaming fish the other day and, Chinese style with ginger and green onions. And he came up to me and the first thing he said was, I want to try the eyeballs. He is a foodie to a very, very high degree because I don't know which child wants to eat fish eyeballs. But so he loves food and I wanted to write about the food in the Bible. And I thought it was going to be a really simple project because I'm just going to look at the scripture, all of the different stories in the Bible about food and write a book about food. Simple. And then what I discovered is that it's not so simple, because here's a weird thing. In American culture, we treat food as a reward. So we say things like, oh, I've been really good today, so I'm going to eat a dessert. Or we would give a treat to our pets who have been obedient. So food is seen as a reward. But if you look at scripture, God feeds his people either right after a great rebellion or right before a great rebellion. So for example, he gives his people manna in the desert right after they grumble and mumble. Why would you do that? Like, that's just enabling. Or right after Herod killed John the Baptist, that's actually when Jesus fed the 5,000 men and women and children. In response to great rebellion, Jesus feeds us. So it's actually a picture of his grace and his mercy. And even until the very, very end, right before Judas betrays him with a kiss, Jesus was still offering Judas wine in his cup, inviting Judas to repent, inviting Judas to be reconciled to him. You don't have to betray me. I love you. I'm washing your feet. I'm still giving you bread. And so food is not a reward in the Bible. Food is a picture of God's mercy and grace. So I'm really excited that it's coming out. I'm nervous because it is going to be a new genre of children's literature. There hasn't been, not that I know of, another book on biblical theology for children. So I'm both excited and a little nervous because it's not the typical storybook that we usually find. And I love storybooks in children's literature.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's great. And the artistry of that, your friend, is it Hannah? Her name, she did all the artwork. It's just amazing. So I encourage everybody to go pre-order or order a copy, taste and see, right?
Taste and see. All about God's goodness.
Well, thank you for giving us your insight on transitions in ministry, Irene.
Thank you, Christine.
Wasn't Irene so amazing? I love her so much. She has such great wisdom and insight, and I love learning from her. So I just wanted to pop in and orient you that we're now transitioning, no pun intended, to a conversation with Glenna Marshall. Glenna is going to tell her story, and you're going to be so encouraged. It's a great way to end our season together. So here's Glenna.
I'm happy to welcome Glenna Marshall to By Faith. Hey, Glenna.
Hey, Christine.
I'm so glad we finally get to talk on the podcast. I met you, you know, a few years ago, and you've always been on my list of like, I got to get Glenna on here at some point. Oh, I just feel like this is the perfect topic and conversation. So I'm so glad.
Yeah, it is. And I think when we met, I think my husband and I were actually in a really tough place in ministry, because I specifically remember telling you in a hotel lobby, I think we're going to leave our church.
I do remember that.
Yeah. And we didn't.
So. Still there. But still y'all, there. Y'all at the time he was the only staff member?
Yes. For 14 years, he was senior pastor, only staff, no elders, nothing.
Okay.
Just him. And then me. I always joke. I was the other elder secretly behind closed doors.
I totally get that. When we started our church, we had two elders, my husband and another guy who's one of our teaching pastors. He's our teaching pastor, and they would call me in for tiebreakers.
Oh, wow.
I know. I'm like, no. I mean, we joke, the church, they do joke about that with the church, but sometimes I'm like, that sounds like I was an elder. I wasn't.
It does.
Yeah, I wasn't.
You were a pseudo elder.
I did not want to be one, but they wouldn't tell me who said what. Like, they'd be like, we can't decide on this. Oh. This is one of the options. This is the other. And you know what? I always chose not my husband.
Oh, that is awesome.
I know. Isn't that funny?
That is funny.
And none of these were like huge decisions, like
sure.
bylaws or something. It was like, should we do this event or that? You know. Anyway, we just jumped in and didn't even introduce you.
Okay.
So will you introduce yourself and where you're serving? Tell us about your family, all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So William and I, my husband, William, we've been married 18 years. And 16 of those years, we have lived and served in Southeast Missouri. I like to tell people we're kind of halfway between St. Louis and Memphis. Just that gives you a picture of the United States where we are. We're in the armpit of the U.S., as I like to say. It's hot and humid here, and it's really flat. When we first came here, my husband was just filling the pulpit because this church was without a pastor, and it was connected with someone where we went to church in Tennessee, where we're both from. And so we just came to fill the pulpit. That's it. And my husband wasn't even done with seminary. And I wrote in my journal that night after we came for the day, what a horrible place to live. I will never go back there.
Oh no.
6 months later, I lived there.
God's like,
yeah, you should never make like definitive statements like that. Even in your journal, you just have no control. So yeah. So anyway, we moved, my husband finished seminary. We moved here in 2005 and he was senior pastor for 14 years by himself. I was 24. He was 27. We're really young. And we have been here ever since. We've adopted two kids. Our sons, Isaiah and Ian, are 13 and 6, and just the absolute joy of our lives. And yeah, so we're here. And as we're going to talk about, our church went through a unique situation a couple of years ago. And in my spare time, between chauffeuring children to sporting events, is writing, and I do a bit of speaking and traveling as well.
Yeah. And I highly recommend people grabbing your work because you do talk more about some of the experiences you've had in the years that have not related to ministry, but you've experienced a lot of chronic pain, infertility, mm-hmm. and that whole process. And so you write very candidly about that. And so I think if those are topics that listeners are interested in, or would like to know more about, then grab Glenna's books and find her online. I'll link to all that in the show notes. Okay. So you mentioned earlier that your church went through an interesting transition, and that's why I wanted to chat with you today. I'm so fascinated by it and I want to hear about it, but I want our listeners to hear as well, because I know it's not just about what's happened at your church, but just we all in ministry go through transitions, whether you didn't even leave your church and y'all went through a transition. So
we did, can you,
just start maybe at the beginning where you want to start and tell us what's happened. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because I mean, our ministry was really hard from day one. We walked into a church that had a lot of internal problems. We're in a rural area. It was a small Baptist church. And my husband just came in very passionate, excited. We came from a very healthy church setting. He's fresh out of seminary. He just comes in. He's so good in the pulpit. He's such a gifted preacher and teacher. And we just bumped into conflict from the very first day. And I mean, for 12 years, it was just chronically hard. Lots of most internal conflict within the church, and most of it aimed at my husband. You know, we followed a pastor of 30 years. Those mm-hmm. are hard shoes to step into. And I honestly think there were a lot of unregenerate people in the church who were calling shots and making decisions who weren't even following Christ, from the best I could tell. And it was very, very hard. And, you know, when you and I met, my husband and I had come through those years and were considering a change because we just felt like we were done in our area, that the Lord couldn't use us anymore. Maybe just our reputation in our small town was terrible because of so much conflict in the church. We weren't from the area, so we were still the outsiders after all this time. And, you know, the Lord just blocked every exit. If one of us considered leaving, the other one didn't have peace about it, and then vice versa. And so we just prayed for the Lord to breathe some life into our ministry. If he was going to keep us here, we just really needed a reason to stay. If we weren't wanted here, like, that's hard, you know? So we began to pray. And honestly, the Lord had done some work in our family. We have adopted both of our kids, and through adoption, we are a multiracial family, and raising a Black son really opened my eyes and my husband's eyes to the segregation that still exists within the church today. In our town specifically, a very racially segregated town with horrible racial strife history. Blacks and whites do not worship together. It's just not done. And so we're raising a child of color who goes to church, and he's only one of about two or three people of color. And that's really hard for him. And he expresses, even at like 6 years old, why am I the only person who looks like me? why is there no one at church who looks like me? Why don't I have any friends at church? Because, you know, he's in school, but our whole life revolves around church ministry. That's right. Our family here. And so we began praying that the Lord would help us to really break through that boundary, that racial boundary in our area, which is really hard to do given the town's history. And so we just began praying for years. And the Lord answered those prayers in some little ways with some new members and things that I think really spoke to my son that the Lord cared for him, which was wonderful. But back in 2017, my husband and my oldest son went to a Fellowship of Christian Athletes event at our local high school. It was called Fields of Faith. And that's something that they do all around the country. But this guy got up to speak at this Fields of Faith event. And he was about my husband's age. He was African-American. And he stood up and he just proclaimed the clearest, most beautiful presentation of the gospel that William said I've ever heard. And so after the event, he said, I've got to find that guy and I've got to figure out who he is. So he Facebook stalked him. And then he sent him a message and said, hey, I'm a local pastor. I heard your talk. Wondered if you'd be interested in having lunch. And this other guy's name was Kenny. And he thought it was a little weird, but he was a nice guy. So he agreed. And they had lunch and became friends. And they began having lunch every week. And they were just theologically and doctrinally just exactly the same straight down the line, coming from very different backgrounds. Kenny grew up in our town and then left as a non-believer, as an atheist, actually came to faith in Christ living in St. Louis and joined a multi-ethnic church in St. Louis and served there for many years, became an elder there, and really had a passion to go back to his hometown and pastor a multi-ethnic church. And really, he knew the segregation issue in this town because he grew up here. And he did come back and ended up pastoring a Black church, which was not his goal. That was not his vision, but it was the church he grew up in. And they needed a pastor. It was not a denomination that he agreed with theologically. And he said as much. And they said, that's okay. We just need a pastor. And so he moved his family back and was pastoring there, I think about 4 years, and just really working for reform in that church and preaching the gospel faithfully. So by the time he and William met and became friends, I think in both of them was a desire to see a different kind of ministry in our town that has never been done before. And, you know, just to speed the story along, 2 years after they met, our churches merged as one congregation. And it's so weird. It's so weird to take a Black church and a white church and merge them together. But the churches were on board with it. They trusted their pastors. And we both dissolved our former names as churches and became a new church with like new bylaws, new constitution, all of those things. So now we actually own two properties. One of them's too small for both churches to meet in. So we use it as a community center. And it's in the area of town that we would like to serve and be in sort of in an incarnational ministry type of way. It's a very underserved and ethnically diverse part of our city. It's literally on the other side of the tracks. And we've purchased property to build a large community center where we will one day worship. And the Lord just has laid one thing after the other before us. It like, if when I tell the story, it sounds impossible to me, except that it wasn't, and the Lord made a clear path, and it helps me to see that it makes sense why the Lord kept us here.
Yeah.
A vision that we never could have imagined when we started.
And so, that he appointed the child that you have for you to spark some of these conversations even before you knew of Kenny.
Yeah. So, I don't think I ever would have even considered the issue of segregation in the church. I mean, I never did before we had children. And then the Lord, in his sovereignty, used something like infertility to lead us down this path, which is amazing.
Whose idea was the merge? Who first brought it up?
Well, one day the guys were sitting at lunch. They met every week over barbecue. That was their thing. And William, my husband, said to Kenny, you know, what do you think is next for your church? And Kenny said, I don't know. I feel like we're really, really stuck. So William paused for a minute and he said, he just blurted it out. what if we merge churches? So I was really nervous to see what Kenny would say. And Kenny said, I'm 100% in favor of that. And I think individually they both had been thinking it, but were sort of afraid to broach the topic. Like, is that even possible? And one day they both were just completely sold on the idea. They took some time to pray through it and talk with people within both congregations. And there was a lot of meetings and things. Yeah. But I mean, I think, honestly, William verbalized it first, but I really think it was in both of their hearts. Mm-hmm.
The Lord, it was the Lord's
idea. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you explain the leadership structure since you have two pastors?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we felt like it was really important that for both congregations to see both men as equal pastors and shepherds, that they would both need to be co-pastors. And so they are, they have equal authority. So it's basically like having two preaching pastors. They are actually right now training two men to be elders so that they can add to that. And it's one from each former congregation. And so they've been in doing training for the past year in that regard. And so right now, both William and Kenny, they have equal authority as pastors and they share the pulpit. It's really like 50-50, honestly, as well as like Sunday school classes and things like that. And it's interesting. They're gifted, both of them very gifted in the pulpit, very committed to exposition. However, personality-wise, polar opposites. And where, you know, William struggles, he's always struggled with like administrative parts of pastoring, which when you're a solo pastor, you have to do it all. Kenny really shines in those areas. And I mean, I feel like they're a really good balance for one another, which is great.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So I'd love to talk about this for you personally, mm-hmm. because now you have a co-pastor's wife too. Mm-hmm. And she, I mean, you described their personalities, you know, I don't know her, but I'm sure you guys have different personalities too, because everyone's so unique. So I'm wondering, just speaking to that alone, that's a transition for you and how mm-hmm. you approach your role. So mm-hmm. can you talk some about that? And what have you, maybe what are some of the challenges that you face and what have been some of the joys? Because I would imagine there's a lot of joys in that.
Yeah, the joys are that I feel less alone as pastor's wife. Like there's another woman in the church who, you know, sort of has to work through some of the criticisms and the things that we endure as ministry wives. And, you know, I can pull her aside every once in a while and say, how did you feel about that meeting? You know, are you okay? Because I know that, you know, business meetings and things like that, I have a little bit of PTSD from the years of being the solo pastor's wife. And so there's a lot of joy in knowing that the burden is shared and she and I are as different as William and Kenny. She's a good deal older than I am. And yet I've been a pastor's wife much longer than she has. So we have different kinds of wisdom that we can share with one another. She's got some grown kids. I've still got young kids. And so it's really helpful in that regard to have a way to encourage one another in different ways. I think that, you know, you write about this in your new book that's coming out. I loved the theme of trying to find your place in ministry. I felt like I had my place finally, and then we merged and I sort of had to refind my place. Where am I in this ministry? And, you know, joking about sort of feeling like a faux elder before my husband had a partner in ministry, it was very odd to suddenly not have to be that person for him. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll always be his support and he always runs things by me. I mean, but there's less of it. And honestly, it's a relief. It's a mm-hmm. huge relief. I feel that he has a partner who's a pastor fully, you know, he's a pastor who bears that burden of shepherding just like my husband does. And I don't have to carry it.
Yeah.
Such a relief getting to let some of those, it's just, I mean, maybe it's perceived pressure, but it feels like pressure to me. And yeah. I don't have to be privy to all of the information like I used to, which
that's
is
a blessing.
So great.
Totally.
So great.
Well, I'm wondering what you have learned about working with a pastor and a pastor's wife who come from a different tradition. They, mm-hmm. you know, I would imagine this is my, maybe that not, but you know, two churches who are doing two different things and approaching things differently. So what are you seeing about yourself with fresh eyes because of them?
Yeah, I think that we all have to sort of grapple with Just because we've done something one way for a long time doesn't mean it's the only or the best way to do something. When it came to something like music, which I play the piano every week, my husband plays guitar, like we're those people who have to sort of do it all because there's not a lot of other people who can. And so, you know, when it came to things like music, we took the list of the songs that the other church sang the most, the list of the ones that we sang the most, and did like a Venn diagram. And so where the overlap was, we sang those songs like every Sunday for the first 6 months. And, you know, my husband and I have learned now how to listen to a song that falls more into like Black gospel tradition. There's not a lot of notated music for that. My husband and I have gotten really good at trying to pick out songs and set them to music. And we've grown in our appreciation for types of music. And that was really stretching for me because as a musician, I like what I like, you know, and I was sort of committed to a certain type of music that felt right in church, you know, a little bit more maybe theological depth than what some churches sing, and maybe the music's not great. Well, I feel like I've been challenged to sort of widen my horizons when it comes to that and learn to appreciate like the honesty of some of the music that our other church sang. And we have a man from the other congregation that leads with us. And I mean, our practice times are some of my favorite times of the week. I love it so much. It's really grown my appreciation for the cultural part of music within the church. Yeah. It was hard at first because I'm a white girl sitting at a piano. I'm learning.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. I'm sure this is really making you, everyone, think and be purposeful and intentional. And I love that. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about transition on this episode. And I think I love that we're talking to you about transition in your own church. You didn't leave. Mm-hmm. And obviously the church has changed a lot. And it sounds like it's in really great ways. But I think a lot of women, myself included, I've experienced this where I'm in my church, but the church grows or it changes in some way. And so I feel very disoriented. I even remember someone saying to me when our church plant kind of moved into more of an established church feel, someone said, "Christine, it sounds like you feel like you've lost something and your husband has gained something." And that's exactly how I felt because I had been so involved and kind of what you were saying, like a faux elder, which we both would say we're not elders.
We're not elders.
And I don't want to be, but so engaged in knowing so much because you have to in some ways be engaged. And so I felt like I lost something when I moved into that new time. And it took me a while to find my footing again. And so I think a lot of women experience that. And it's something that we don't really talk about, or I don't hear people talk about that disorientation. And you just kind of like, I would just go to church and I would do things, but I just felt very kind of lost. And so I'm wondering if you have any wisdom or insight you could give us about what you've learned through this transition and change that might be helpful to someone listening.
Yeah, I think that it's a good way to explain it. Like, he's gained something, but you feel like you've lost something. Initially, when we merged, I did feel a little bit of loss because I wasn't William's like number one partner in ministry now that he had an elder, a co-pastor to carry that burden with him, a burden I was never meant to carry and really don't want to. But it was, I did feel a little uncertain those first few months. I wasn't sure so if I'm not this person to my husband, then what am I doing here at the church? You know, what is my place? However, I think that what encouraged me through that was knowing that, I mean, the Lord goes before us in our ministry and he has ordered and ordained all of our days. So when we're surprised by a transition, I mean, he's not. And I think we can look back at the things that we've already lived through in ministry and maybe look for the ways that he's prepared us that we didn't, you know, that we missed maybe. I think of all the years of fighting against bitterness because of church hurt prepared me when we merged to keep short accounts, you know, when I meet someone new from this other congregation or, you know, whatever the situation may be, it doesn't always have to be what it was a long time ago. The Lord can do new things in your ministry. And for me to really embrace what was going on, though it felt strange, I just had to hold everything with really open hands. and realize like, this is not my ministry. It's not even my husband's ministry. Like, this is the Lord's kingdom that he is building on this earth, and we're part of it. And so you can go through hard stuff and keep your hands really open. You can go through good stuff and keep your hands really open. The Lord may change the shape of your ministry a lot over the years. It's definitely been true in our ministry, but he goes before us. And I find that really comforting. He's brought us through some hard stuff. He will be faithful through the next bout of hard stuff that we go through. And we're just going to walk in faithfulness and hold things loosely. Because again, I think it's so easy to be tempted. Like, we're building our church. We're building our little kingdom here. It's not ours.
Yeah.
It's not ours. And thankfully it's not ours. I don't want to build something that doesn't last.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're speaking to identity. I find that when I am really struggling with transition and feeling that loss, it's because I realize I've put so much identity into being the pastor's wife or in what I did previously. And God is moving me to a different spot. And I resist that because it feels like I'm losing a part of myself when in reality, that's not my identity. So a lot of times transition has helped me to realize I'm living from a false identity, and who I really am is I'm a child of God, beloved by God, not based upon what I do, but because of Jesus Christ and his grace in my life. So yeah, I think that's, in some ways, I'm just repeating what you said, but that's what came to mind.
But I think, you know, even if you're in not big transitions in church, but even seasons where you maybe can do a lot of ministry in the church because you have more time, and then you transition to maybe having small children or maybe teenagers, but you're driving them everywhere.
That's right.
and you don't have that time. It may feel like an awkward transition, like, oh my goodness, what is my place when I can't do what I used to? I think that's when you have to come back to just exactly what you said. Like, my identity is not wrapped up in how much I can do for the church. I'm going to be faithful with what God has given me in whatever season, whatever transition. I think it'll look different. It's not all, we're not going to be the pastor's wife at 24 necessarily that we will be at 44 or 64. Yeah.
So true. Thank you, Glenna, for your insight today and telling your story. It's just, I just love hearing what God's doing there. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to By Faith, friends. Join me next week on By Faith as I share from my heart about being a pastor's wife. Until then, friends, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.